50% of all businesses, or even more, fail if it's your first attempt.
Thank you for listening. We're back with another episode.
Oh, yeah.
We've had a great first conversation. We usually talk about some other stuff before we start recording.
Secret stuff.
At one point, I feel like we should change that. And because I was thinking about the whole Patreon thing, mm-hmm. where we could invite people to have a listen to the uncut version and the full conversation, mm-hmm. even just for $1 per episode, something like that. Like, they could be could be in the full thing, and we can record our full conversation.
They'd be in like the green room with us.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like kind of like in the room with us, no filters, no nothing, and then you get the whole episode as soon as we've recorded it. You are the first one to listen to them before we even start editing. But then it's also very hard to listen to us because we're probably going off on a tangent every now and then. And we don't sound as sophisticated as Sonia, our wonderful editor, makes us sound without the ums and ahs and breaks and so on. But again, we're super excited that you are listening to this episode. And I'm going to give it off to Lauren to start it off.
Oh, yeah. Cool. Yeah, no, we had a really good chat just about what's going on, what's been happening in the studios. And I was telling Stefan about how maybe April, May of this year, I was starting to feel down on myself and felt kind of like a failure because I was looking at my books and my numbers and I did my projections and realized that I was going to make less money this year than the previous year. And even though logically, I've said this before, and I know this to be true, that freelance and running your own business and entrepreneurship, things will go up and down, it felt really bad when I realized it was going to happen to me, as it usually does. It's easy to give the advice, hard to stomach it when it's happening to you. And I started feeling really down, and I think unnecessarily bad about myself, doubting my skills and wondering if this was going to be it and if it was all going to be downhill from here, because, you know, progressing forward in time, you hope that everything else is going to progress too. And it felt like I was backsliding. And I thought back to this piece of advice that I gave in 2017 when I was on the Creative Pep Talk podcast about how you shouldn't compete with other artists, you should compete with yourself. I use the analogy of if you were playing Mario Kart, you're trying to race against your old ghost and trying to beat your best time. And I think we can even bring up the clip. Yeah, here is the actual clip from Creative Pep Talk.
It's like have you ever played Mario Kart?
Yeah.
When you can do those.
Playing the ghost.
You're playing the trial run, right?
Yeah.
You're totally playing against your best time. That is really the best advice I could give to any broad creative, is play against your Mario Kart ghost.
Yes.
Do not play against your brother's Mario Kart ghost, your, you know, idol's Mario Kart ghost. You gotta play against your own Mario Kart ghost.
And so I thought about this advice and I was applying it to my own life, and using my own advice, I realized that, like, oh, I am failing. I'm not beating my Mario Kart ghost. Now I feel bad. And then I thought about it for a while and I was like, okay, well, that advice was true for me back then. And I still do believe it, that it's okay to compete with yourself and to want to outdo yourself every year. But it doesn't mean you have to absolutely hold yourself to those standards. And if you fall anywhere short of it, it's a failure. Mm-hmm. Because in the longer term, mm-hmm. like the longer scheme of things, it's all just moving forward and you are going to be doing a lot over the next, you know, 10, 20 years versus just this one singular year, mm-hmm. which brings us to another point that Stefan brought up in the conversation with something else that he heard on this topic.
So I listened to a YouTube video that's called from Matt Diavella. He's a great YouTuber that talks about life stuff and life lessons. And so he talked about the 3-year plan. People should set aside a number of time or like a specific amount of time to accomplish something. Like if you want to start doing Instagram more seriously, like set yourself weeks, months, or even years of how long you're going to try it. And only if it fails by the end of that period, then you've failed. And for us, like I'm more than aware of that feeling that Lauren had at the middle of the year. I've had it the whole beginning of the year, like January, February, and March was like, I was freaking out because I knew in the position that I was, I couldn't possibly make more money than I did in 2018. And I told Lauren my goals that I've set for myself. And the thing is, this year was just crazy to start with. And I also said, like, it couldn't get possibly better because, like, I've had, like, the opportunity to work with the most amazing brands and clients. And so I was like, this, like, usually my clients stick for one time, not because it's not great work, but because it's very specific for campaigns and so on. Mm-hmm. And so I realized, like, in many of the things that I've done, and after watching that video, and that was not too long ago, I looked back on the last 3 years of doing Instagram, and I saw, like, I've grown over 300,000, maybe 400,000 in the last 3 years, and it's just been incredible journey that I've had been on. It's only been pretty much 3-4 years, which, yeah, 2017 is when it took off, and so we're 2019, so that's about 3 years in of my journey as a lettering artist, as a professional lettering artist. And then you can look back and you feel like, man, this is insane. And so if I have a bad day, I started reminding myself of that and looking forward. And so, yeah, it's interesting to hear from that from you, Lauren, as well, because I'm going through that too. And probably our listeners are thinking the same thing, like, well, they got it good. They're probably set off and everything works out well for them. But it's like, no, we all have our fears and doubts and like not knowing exactly what the year has in front of us, in store for us. And so we got to just be patient and hope for the best and do our best. Like, that's pretty much my understanding is, like, the only thing that I have control over is what I do and what I can control. Like, I can give my best, but at the end of the day, I have to leave with, like, feeling like, have I done my best? Yes or no? And if it's a yes, then perfect. If it's a no, then asking myself, like, could I have done any more? Mm-hmm. Maybe not.
Yeah, no, I think that that YouTube video that you referenced is a really good reminder that when you get so zoomed into, I had a bad day or even a bad week or maybe a bad month where you didn't have a lot of work come in and you start to doubt yourself and your abilities just based on that one small time frame, mm-hmm. it's equally important to zoom out to the whole time frame of, like, wait, okay, maybe I had a slow month in terms of money or Instagram growth, but what have I done over the last year? And then take it even a step further and think about the last 3 years, 5 years, and mm-hmm. you start to appreciate, oh yeah, all that stuff does add up. And in between those, you know, for you, 3 years of growing your Instagram so large, there were probably weeks or months where the growth slowed, but then it picked back up and maybe you had exactly. like an amazing month. So just know that those things will average out over a longer time span. And it's okay. The gut reaction to you when you have a bad week or month or day is to focus in on it, but always try to remember to bring yourself back out. It actually reminds me of, do you watch Chef's Table?
Yes.
Okay. So I just started getting into Chef's Table and I'm obsessed. Oh my gosh.
So delicious.
It's so delicious. And so the storytelling is so nice. Yeah. And I just watched the episode with Christina Tosi of Milk Bar.
That's one of my favorite episodes. Yeah.
Such a great episode. And she said something, actually a couple chefs have said stuff that have stuck with me. I've written it down, but she said something that I was like, oh yes, like that is so good. She talked about how, you know, Milk Bar started and how she became famous and Anderson Cooper talked about her pie on TV and that's how all the traffic started coming in. But before that, she mentioned that she came from pretty humble beginnings and she really just loved to cook and loved to bake. She said, no one really cared about what I said or what I was doing. Before all of this, I was working, you know, in basement kitchens for 10 years before any of this happened. I was just working in the kitchen, mm-hmm. cooking, doing what I like to do. It was a job. And she just happened to get her big break when she started working for, what's his name? I think it's like Wiley DeFranc. He did a WD50 in New York. It was like this really fancy, trendy restaurant, mm-hmm. and it got all these awards. And she was the pastry chef there. When I thought about her story, I was like, yeah, a lot of people are putting in the work and showing up every day for 2, 5, 10 years before anything really big happens. Yeah. And if you don't keep going, then you might not know what that big break is going to look like. If you quit, you know, maybe 6 months in, maybe you'd never know. And I think that's something we've talked about too on this mm-hmm. podcast, is that's why passion is so important, because without passion, you're not going to make it past that second or third year, because you will be defeated by, you feel like you're not growing enough and it's not happening fast yeah. enough.
And
when the timeline's different for everybody.
It's been the story from so many YouTubers that I've known, or that I got to hear their story, was really that they've worked so hard before, like been videographers for decades before mm-hmm. they even got a big break. Like they failed in different businesses, and you never want to be in the season where you know, like, or where you are going to fail at a business. But it's interesting to hear that statistically 50% of all businesses, or even more, fail if it's your first attempt. But for everyone who starts their second business, the likelihood of succeeding is almost at 90%. So you would be really dumb not to try a second time and try to do it better. And so from what I've seen, is like Peter McKinnon is one that I had the pleasure mm-hmm. to be with and to hear his story. And he is absolutely incredible. Like he's been growing like over 1 million subscribers in less than a year. He's already at over 4 million. And you hear those stats, like that has happened in the last 2 years, pretty much. And the craziest thing about that is that he was a videographer like for 10 years before. Like he has done so many things and tried so hard. And
wasn't he a magician too?
Yeah. Well, he tried a lot of things. Like he told me even that his first business on leather making failed. Like he tried, he over like underpriced his products, and it was like great stuff that he created. Mm-hmm. But now he has an audience and it works really well for him. But you see the success, and that's the tip of the iceberg, but you'd never seen the work that it went into before. And I feel like for a lot of mm-hmm. of our listeners who are listening right now, is you are maybe working on something hard and you're not in the spotlight. You're not like on the top 100 or top 10 or whatever it is that you want to be the best at. And doesn't mean that this won't happen for you, or it doesn't mean that you should give up and just let it go. Like the 3-year rule is really to ask yourself, what do you really want to try out? Like, what do you want to accomplish? And then give yourself like, all right, this is how much time I want to invest trying to do that. Like, we are trying to set up a successful podcast. Mm-hmm. And what we are mostly passionate about is really to help other people out. And so for us, just doing it is already fun, but getting to do it and inspiring others is even more fun. But then we're saying like, well, we don't look at the numbers. I especially don't look at the numbers of the podcast that much. You actually don't have any access, I think.
Yeah, I've never looked at them.
Exactly.
Because we just enjoy making them. And yeah. when you and I first started talking about like actually doing this podcast together, we kind of got on the same page of, I think we have great conversations. This is something that should be shared with people. It's valuable. It'll be free. Yeah. And we know that looking at other podcasts that our friends and people we admire have started, it'll just take time to grow. And honestly, too, for anyone who's like starting their own podcast too, you get to piggyback off of every single one of your like pieces of hard work. And because Stefan and I have built up our businesses, it'll make it easier to start a podcast. Not easy, but easier. Exactly, because we yeah. have a jumping off point. It's still going to take plenty of time, which is why the numbers don't really matter too much. And we, you know, we'll get sponsors eventually, but we kind of talked about it and we want to do this for a long time. And therefore there's no pressure right now, because we just have to keep making stuff and having honest conversations and, you know, working on our own businesses. You get to listen into conversations that are like happening in real time. We're talking about stuff that's happening like this week, mm-hmm. you know, at this stage in our business. Like I wish I had a record of these kinds of conversations 5 years ago, like 10 years ago, you know, trying to figure it out.
And we get to actually, and that's even for us, it's really cool because we get to listen back on these conversations. But what I really enjoy as well is like, it's opening up a new field. Every time that I try something new, one of the things I've learned over the time is really to always add one more step to everything that I do. It's been the silliest example is making my bed in the morning is like, I used to do it better than I'm doing right now, but then I started like thinking of like, all right, I'm starting to make my bed. I'm making this a habit. I want to be like organized and so on. And then after a while, I figure out like, what other ways are there to actually make your bed? And then you start looking into like, how does a hotel make your bed? Like, how do you come into a room?
Did you start folding towel animals?
No. Oh, I should though.
You should. That's actually super fun. Oh my gosh. I love when you walk into the room and there's the swans or like the floppy bunny.
I can't imagine how much time you would need to have to do that. But again, that's exactly that. Like you start out, it's like latte art. That's how I learned.
Mm-hmm.
It's like by trying to improve every single day, trying to do something new. And with the podcast, we're doing the same thing. It was like, all right, how can we tell stories a lot better? How can we improve something? How can we gauge the audience? Like we're still at the beginning and we try mm-hmm. to do this while we're doing everything else. But for us is also like, how do we get sponsors into this podcast? How do we get good sponsors? How do we have fun doing all these things? It's coming up with like, how do we monetize it well so that we can actually make an extra revenue stream out of this? Not that we have to, but it's more like to make it sustainable, even to think of like, hey, if we can grow this even further, like make a YouTube channel out mm-hmm. of that, create like posts out of that, like on Instagram. And mm-hmm. and the more content we can create, the more people we get to inspire, the better it's going to be for you as a listener and for us as a creator. And that's what I feel like this is the great thing about like starting something new and then just trying it out, like having the time, the focus of like, what if I tried this? Like same thing is with my shop. Like I'm constantly thinking about like how to improve the shop experience. Like how can we make it better? How can we make it easier? And you learn so much, like even selling books, like I've started selling my book, like a signed edition. And I wasn't sure like how much would I be able to sell. And I sold out enough copies, like it did really well. But the whole packaging situation, I've never sent a physical product and I don't recommend it, but it is so funny to try out new things and to actually experience the, mm-hmm. like I can see the buzz that comes from like selling something online, like a physical product. And then like, ooh, I get to package all of these. Mm-hmm. Like the headaches start when you have to actually fill out a whole declaration form and put it in like on the computer. And then it just gets really tough. And you're like, why did I do this in the first place? And that's when the 3-year rule kicks in again, which is what I feel like is bringing it back to the original theme. Like if you start out and you start selling packages and you see like, oh, this is so annoying. Like, oh, I can't see, like, I can't see an end to doing this. Like, what if one day you get 100,000 packages? Would it be worth it then? And so that's what you have to ask yourself probably in all of these is like, how do you set up what you do and like, give yourself a timeline, like this is how long I will try to run this thing. Like maybe I'll say like, I'll try to do these workshops like for a year and see how that goes. If it does really well, then I'll keep going and I'll keep trying. And so far I've always had fun with workshops. Mm-hmm. I've always loved meeting the people and I still, man, this is going to sound funny, but I had like a nightmare the day before about like the workshops in the States, mm-hmm. which is so funny to hear about because probably when this episode airs, like it's probably going to be already done.
Right.
But the thing is, it's a reality is like, I still get anxiety over a couple of things. Like on the day itself, I'm mm-hmm. super fine, but I'm trying to think of every possible scenario of what I need to think about. And that's exactly what's giving me anxiety.
It's true. I mean, the nerves will always get to you no matter what stage you're in, especially, but it's a good thing because it means you're challenging yourself and you're trying something new. And I forget where I heard this, but I heard someone talk about, was it Mel Robbins? Maybe it was Mel Robbins. That's my best guess. Talking about how fear is actually a very similar sensation as excitement in your body. Like your heart starts racing, like you get hot. Like,
and if we
can kind of reframe fear in our minds as not this like evil thing that means everything's falling apart, but as, you know, it's just your body's natural response to being excited and like invigorated in a way. Like it's, I think we've talked about, I think I've talked about this on the podcast before about how doing things that scare you, you know, people, there are things in life where humans like to be scared. We go to haunted houses, we watch horror movies, we go on roller coasters, and we willingly do that. And so if you take that roller coaster attitude and bring that to your business, it can actually empower you to be more brave and to try new things, because look at that fear as, what if the fear could be fun? It's a little bit thrilling. You know, it's not a bad thing.
It's interesting because I've seen that in a Will Smith movie, and I talk about that in my book, but like fear is a choice. Like danger is real, but fear is a choice. And it's really good because you think about it, like yes, if you go swim in a shark infested water, like that's a real danger. Like there's nothing you can talk about that. Like I'm not going to start a new business because I remember I failed, and I'm not going to draw something again because the last 10 times I've tried something, I've never gotten to what I've drawn or like what I've had in my head. And so I failed. And so the fear comes up and it's like, there's no danger. And the fear is like, you're afraid of failure, which is, that's a choice, is like, you're choosing to be afraid instead of choosing to like, you know what, I'm going to look that fear in the face. Like I was afraid of drawing anything longer than 3 words. Every time that a client came in with a long sentence, I was like, you know what? It would sound so much better if it was only like, I don't know, 2 words. Like we could totally shorten that down. And they're like,
that's so funny.
No, this is our like our slogan. We don't want to shorten it down. I'm like, but like slogans are usually short, like just do it, like I'm loving it and stuff like that. And they're like, that's not our slogan. So just do what we ask, or we just look for someone else. And I'm like, oh, all right, I'm going to try doing that. But I had to overcome that fear of creating compositions. And so I've like really dove into that and kind of like tried to overcome that obstacle. But that's kind of what I teach in the, I teach that in the workshop is like, I've been there. I've been at this place where I've like, I wasn't sure how to create that composition and how to come up with something new and fresh. But then you realize like, you know what, that's just something you have to learn. And then you have to figure out a process, and teaching that process now is like so great, because now I see everyone else succeed at what they do and be really good at it.
Yeah. And it's one of those things too, that once you conquer it or master it or get your footing, it sticks with you. You know, it's kind of like learning how to ride a bike. Once you figure out composition after, you know, trial and error, you get to keep that knowledge for life and you can pass it on. I wanted to throw a note in there about fear. Earlier this year, I was talking with my business coach, Rebecca, and I was expressing these fears about, I was telling her how I felt, and she said, what are you scared of? And I don't know exactly what I said, but I was like, I'm scared of this, this, and this. Basically, like, what are people going to think? Is it going to change my relationships? And she asked me after that, she was like, okay, like that's valid, but let me ask you this. Would you survive if those things happened? And I was like, yes, I would. Like I would survive. It's true. And it was just a realization that you can feel the fear and the outcomes could happen, but also that kind of like to bring it full circle too, that long time horizon, if you zoom out, it's really, you will survive. You will continue. Yeah. If so-and-so leaves a mean comment, or, you know, this relationship, the bridges burn, will you continue on? Will you wake up the next morning? Yes. Are you still passionate about your business? Yes. Or your art, whatever it may be. And that attitude has helped me get through fearful times too. It's kind of like a I guess, a different way to say what's the worst that can happen.
Yeah.
And that's actually something I've used to combat fear. I feel like this just morphed into an episode about fears, which is kind of great. It's a technique I've used too. I read this in, where did I read this? I think I read this in The 4-Hour Workweek by Tim Ferriss. And when I was thinking about leaving my full-time job to go freelance, I asked myself, what's the worst thing that can happen if I leave my job and go freelance? And I had never really sat down to scenario out the real things that would happen versus like, if freelance doesn't work out, then I fail and I'm broke. That's like all my brain was thinking. But when I dove into it, I thought about it and I was like, okay, well, the first layer is I go freelance and I can't find enough clients and I live off of savings for a while. And the next layer is, okay, I get a part-time job to help support the income while I'm still getting my freelance business off the ground. And then the next layer is like, okay, it's not working. Like, I've burned through more savings than I want. The part-time job isn't really cutting it. And so I would just go back and get a full-time job for a while and then try again in a couple more years. Mm-hmm. And when I thought about that, I was like, that's not that bad.
It's like, I'm doing that. I'm going into freelancing.
Exactly. And like the step after, going back to get a full-time job, if I really didn't want to get a full-time job, I would just have to cut my living expenses and either get more roommates or leave New York or move in with my parents if I was really committed to never having a full-time job again. But when you really sit down and realistically scenario it out, you realize that your fears, your brain often jumps to the worst case scenario, like 8 steps down the road. When you have like 8 different safety nets to fall through, you have like plan A through like J basically. And so it's not that bad.
Nope. But I've had the same thing. When I quit my job, I was like, well, all right, I've got some savings lined up. And I definitely can make it through winter. I'm not sure if I can make it after winter. and I was like, well, we'll just see. Like the worst that could happen would be that I would have to move back in with my parents. Mm-hmm. And it's not something that I wanted to, not because they're not great. It's just because I enjoyed living on my own for such a long time that I couldn't imagine myself going back. And it didn't happen. It didn't even nearly happen. Like, it went through fine and I made it out the other side really well. And I'm here and still like, I'm still kind of always like thinking about like, what if I have to declare bankruptcy? Like,
oh my gosh, that's a terrible thing to think about all the time.
Not all the time, but like sometimes I have this thought is like, all right, how much, like, especially when I hire someone, that's kind of like when the thought occurs is like, if I pay them so much, like how long, like what's my burn rate? Like in the startup scene, like you always have like this, what's your burn rate? And like, how long is your landing strip?
Oh, you're like runway kind of?
Your runway, that's one. Like the runway is like how much money do you have and how long can you sustain that burn rate? Like the burn rate is how much you spend a month, like on employees and so on. And depending on how much funding you have, you can do it for 5 months. You can maybe do it if you can live off cheaper or if you find cheaper workforce, you can do it for longer. And so that's where I think of like, all right, so that's my runway is usually right now, it's usually about a year or plus.
And that's where mine is too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I try to think or use that as a starting point to budget like if I want to hire someone else. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, it's very interesting. But again, it's like learning new things, being okay to make mistakes. Like I've said it myself, like again, with the works, with the podcast, like we're burning money with that one, not burning in the literal sense, but we're paying Sonia.
We're investing in our podcast editor.
Sounds so much better. And at the same time, Sonia, our editor, is investing in our podcast too. Like she's working with us on this venture in the sense to make this a great and successful venture.
It's all investing.
Yeah. And we're learning how to do that and seeing like, all right, but this is why you have to have like a plan of how long can you do that for? And not maybe think of the sense of like you're trying to beat yourself, especially not maybe in those areas, because you need to beat yourself where like you don't shouldn't do the same mistakes over again. Like if you see your Mario go-kart running mm-hmm. into a bomb before, then you shouldn't do that in the second round because you've learned from that mistake. And so learn from what you've done, from your mistakes, and see how you can advance, how you can get better. And yeah, like be courageous in trying out new things. Like be courageous in following that passion project that you have. Like you, Lauren, are just teaching a whole new class of passion project students who are just going to embark on this journey.
And yeah, round six.
Exactly. Like how many students have you had so far?
Now in total with this last round, there are almost 1,800 passion to paid students, which is so wild.
That's incredible. And just seeing like all these people like trying out something new, being like, well, they're already investing and seeing like, all right, this is something that's worth to me. So they're already investing into themselves. So they're doing the first step. The same way like my workshop students come to the workshop and they'll learn something new. Mm-hmm. And all we want to see people is see us succeed in what we do, but equally, if not more, see you guys succeed in what you do. And to like, I feel like if we can set creativity free, like the potential that people have, like that's amazing.
I feel like this was like 18 different episodes in one, but I think so many good little nuggets.
Actually, I feel like two episodes in one right there. Like it's beginning and the end of one part and the middle was like a different part.
Yeah, two-part episode.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Striving Artist Podcast. If you enjoy this podcast, please feel free to share it on social media. It would help us a lot if you could also rate, review, and subscribe to the Striving Artist Podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and or SoundCloud. This also helps us in ranking the show and would be greatly appreciated. We would love to hear from you via email, DM, or even voice message on Anchor. We'll see you in the next one. Bye.